college, and they may not have money to go to Harvard or that sort of thing. But when they have to face this assault and this drive-by, you guys know that I was raped and strangled and survived a near homicide. It was an attempted gang rape. But that person likely came from an associated sex industry in this corner of Nashville, Tennessee, where it happened. I got nowhere with the Nashville police, so you know. But that sort of fear that is always with me, every day I have a traumatic flashback to that incident. It's always with me. And when I venture forward to go to school, I don't feel safe. So I think in terms of development, we need community centers and computer education for women, as well as the attention to the domestic violence impact. And I would urge an eliminating homelessness for all women or transgendered or intersex people immediately now. 10-year plan is not going to cut it. We need to get them to safety. The risks and the trauma will scar them for a lifetime, and I think we as a city need to be responsible for that.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
The last person who signed up is Charles Johnson.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to thank you all. I think some of these... my name's Charles Johnson. You heard from some people who are stakeholders. One stakeholder issue that concerns me is one of the 19 service agencies, which I guess means 19 paid executive directors. Mr. Rudman mentioned 19 partner agencies, so that seems like you pay. In this process of ending homelessness, we have to pay 19 executive directors, and 19 agencies need to fill 19 boards. One of those groups gives me a card, you may have seen these before, from Transitions Projects. And it says I'm number 363,805. Now, it's probably like a library card. We don't have 2 billion library card holders in this town. But there's been, as Lightning mentioned, a feeling from those 1,700 people on the street that there's still a disconnect between the need for services and the way services are provided. So I hope that... as you realign your commissioners' positions, you'll all sort of see yourselves as the housing czars and work for efficiency in those systems and perhaps reward those programs that have an ombudsman where the service provider, the people who are in need of services, have somebody at the agency that they can interface with and get answers to, like, how many people are being served? What's your overall budget and stuff like that? There's sometimes a resistance to interface with the people who are most in need. They're made to feel like a number. So I do want to thank you for getting this project going and having the 21-page PDF available online. And one thing that is an issue is we mentioned serving communities of color, and unfortunately, I think that Cameron Witten is still recovering from his birthday party 2 days ago. Ibrahim Mubarak is not able to be with us today, but as you can see, that's something that, whether you look at the people who just presented, the five seats you have up there, they do a little bit better across the river for the five people in power over there. I hope you'll continue to facilitate ways for people in minority populations to interface with those service agencies and become more involved. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much. So if there's no one else to testify, no further questions for staff, let's take a vote on the resolution, please.
Fish.
Mayor, I want to begin by thanking our crack team at the Portland Housing Bureau, Tracy Manning, the senior management team, and I think we're joined today by all three members of our ending homelessness team. So if you could please stand as I mention your name. Sally Erickson, Ryan Diebert, and Jennifer Chang. When we travel around the country, we constantly hear that we have the most talented people in the nation working for us day to day on this problem. We can be very proud of these three professionals, Mayor, and the work that they do, and they deserve our thanks. I'm very pleased to support this resolution and grateful for all the time and energy that's spent bringing us to this day. And I want to just for a moment reflect on the values embedded in this work. And these are the values that guide all the work that we do locally to address the housing needs of people priced out of the market. And the first is we put a premium on prevention. And I know that sounds simplistic, but in almost everything we do up here, if we focus more on prevention and less on the downstream, managing the problem downstream, we not only are more effective, but we save money. And the program that's been identified, which is the gold standard of this, is the short-term rent assistance program. Because for a couple of $1,000s per household, we can prevent people from falling into homelessness, prevent all the problems that Mary identified of children that go to school unable to learn and families that are torn apart. And so we have a program funded by the city, the county, and our local housing authority, which prevents homelessness. And it commands our support in this budget cycle and in future budget cycles. Number two, the work that's been presented to council today illustrates the strong partnerships that we enjoy locally that drive this work. What we like to say is that when the business community and the faith community and the nonprofit community and government link arms, there's no problem we can't tackle. And it was not always so. It was not always so that the faith community had such a prominent seat at the table. It was not always so that the business community had such a prominent seat. We do not ask people what brings them to the table. We ask them to roll up their sleeves and be part of the solution. And I compliment the leaders of this effort for bringing everyone to the table in a spirit of true partnership. The third value is collaboration. Now, it seems we live in a time that if one leader on either side of the river hiccups, there are stories psychoanalyzing the relationship between the city and the county. And what, of course, that masks is a deep and profound collaboration addressing community problems that happens every day at a very high level. Our hiccups are few and far between. Our collaborations and our partnership is deep. And so I think today we also celebrate the fact that we have a county government, a city government, and a local housing authority that work together very effectively. And don't take it from me, when the assistant secretary of the VA was here recently for a forum that addressed veterans' homelessness, she said at that forum she had never visited a city that had such a high level of collaboration. In other cities across the country, there's competition for dollars, there's rivalries, there's conflict, but not here. And that, I think, is a testament to the leaders who bring this forward today. Of course, we can't have a hearing like this today without addressing the elephant in the room, which is what Joe was getting at, which is funding. And at a time when we need more dollars to address a greater need, we have something called sequestration in Washington, which was a blunt force instrument that hit the most vulnerable people in our community the hardest. And as we keep being reminded, Congress structured sequestration so that it was so unpalatable, no one would allow it to happen. And guess what happened? It was allowed to happen. And the people who can least afford those cuts are going to bear the brunt. And the statistics that we have in lost vouchers and lost discretionary dollars and cuts in CDBG, if a year from now this problem is still acute, think back to the day Congress allowed sequestration to drive our budget debate. I want to close with two thoughts. One is the criticism that the housing community often has to rebut, which is, if we're doing such a great job, how come people are still homeless? And it reminds me of the scene in Fantasia, which I remember, one of my favorite movies as a kid, where you're in the basement of the house, there's the bucket brigade, the mop and the bucket, furiously trying to get the water that's flooding into the basement out of the basement. And so the question that's posed is, if you're doing such a great job, how come there's so much water in the basement? And the answer is, we don't control the spigot that is spreading the water down the stairs into the basement. We don't control that. We did not declare war on two countries and send men and women into conflict and then refuse to spend the money to welcome them back. We did not underfund mental health services as a nation or cause 50 million Americans not to have health care. That did not arise in Portland. But it is a national problem. And here is the hard truth, Joe. No matter what we do up here and how much general fund money we spend on this problem, unless the federal government steps up and is a partner, we will never end homelessness. And so I hope that coming out of this today, we are especially frustrated with some of our leaders who would allow budgets to be decided by sequestration rather than thoughtful planning. The final comment I'd like to make is that today is a special day in the housing community because Jean DeMaster is receiving the First Citizen Award. And she's the first prominent leader in the housing movement to be recognized in 85 years for that award. And as a number of us will be at the luncheon today when she's honored, and I looked at the list of people who've been honored, and there's a constant refrain, which is almost all of them have a building in our community named after them. So Gus Solomon won the first Citizen Award, and as we know, there's a federal courthouse with his name on it. Mark Hatfield won the first Citizen Award. We know there's a whole campus up at OHSU that has his name on it. Edith Green won a first Citizen Award, and there's a government building, a rather expensive now green government building that bears her name. Well, today, Jean DeMaster is being honored, and there is a building that carries her name in our community as well, and it's called Jean's Place. And it's a place for homeless women. And I say it's about time that Jean DeMaster took her place with all the other first citizens for her tremendous leadership in our community. Thank you to all who've done the hard work to bring this forward. Now the hard work really begins in implementing it. I'm proud to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Good work, everybody.
Aye.
Fritz.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Fish, for your leadership and for your passion and for that inspiring speech. It is a national problem. We cannot solve homelessness by ourselves here in Portland. The taxpayers of Portland are very generous, and this council follows in a tradition of caring about people who are experiencing homelessness. Gretchen Kefauri, Bud Clark, and now Nick Fish being some of our great leaders in that regard. But this whole council last year voted to, in a budget note, to change the safety net, most $7 million of one-time funding, to change it to ongoing funding. And as a result of that, this council is now looking at cuts in police officers and closing fire stations and other major cuts to programs that people value. And it was absolutely the right thing to do because, as Commissioner Fish noted, things like the safety net funding for short-term rent assistance, some of the other programs in that package that we're now funding and promising to fund ongoing, are essential to our battle. One of my favorite parables is about the child who is on the beach throwing back starfish into the sea. And an older fellow comes along and says, "Why are you throwing back each starfish that's stranded? There are so many of them, it doesn't matter." And the child says, "Well, it matters to this one," as he throws it back into the life-giving sea. And when we're looking at the plan to end homelessness, we are not proposing that we can end poverty throughout the world. We're not proposing that we can make sure that nobody loses their job or has a medical emergency or suffers from domestic violence, although we are addressing all of those. What we are doing is ending homelessness one person at a time. And that's what we've done over the course of this 10 years. And so I think that the name, A Home for Everyone, A United Community, is a good revision of the 10-year plan to end homelessness. It's more understandable. And it's one person at a time. And we care about people one person at a time. I loved what Tracy Manning said about we're providing affordable housing, but what we're doing is seeking to change the outcomes for the people who will live there. And I appreciate Tracy and Sally Erickson and everybody who's, we've got a whole team here, Kate Allen, Daniela Desmer. I think you've got 51 people in the Housing Bureau, I remember from the work session on the budget, and every one of them cares about finding places for people to live, keeping people in housing, and providing support in a compassionate, respectful manner. And yes, we still have way too many people living outside, and we will need to continue to address that challenge. Again, the individual people are not the problem. The system is the problem, and our ability to care for everybody is the problem. Portlanders do have a great capacity for caring, and we will continue to demonstrate that in large or small ways, and we need to work together. So I appreciate that this whole plan and the bringing back of it at this time when we're looking at the budget cuts and how best to prioritize any additional money that we may have. And thank you, Mayor Hales, for continuing the leadership of this council over many years in supporting the caring for our most vulnerable citizens. Aye.
Hales.
Oh, thank you, Commissioner Fish, for your leadership and for your careful management of a difficult, intractable set of problems that we have to keep working on. And I hear from everyone this morning, actually, three themes that are clear and consistent among your comments, yours, the folks that testified, and the housing professionals that are working together. One is partnership. That, yes, you're right, we do need the federal government to be a partner, and that we also need to have that practice and habit of partnership in everything we do, because there are multiple organizations involved, public, private, nonprofit. And that spirit of partnership, it doesn't matter whose turf this is, we have to work together to accomplish this shared purpose. That's a theme I hear among everyone who speaks about this issue, and they're right. The second one is analysis, that a clear-eyed look at what's working and what's not, and be willing to change things and be willing to try new things is critical in any complex problem. And I hear that value, again, clearly from the professionals that are running these programs and from those that are looking at how those programs are working out in reality on the street. And the third, and maybe the most important of all, is empathy, that I hear in everyone's voice, that quality of empathy, that we are passionately concerned about our fellow citizens, that it's not right that there's still people sleeping on the street, and that empathy is so important to motivating us, to inspiring us, and to calling us to action every day to keep making that number smaller and to keep one by one helping more people off the street and back into a good quality of life. So thanks for a great report, for recommitting us all to this objective, and we look forward to making it happen. Aye. Next item, please.
Item 307, authorize a $3,142,568 loan from the Interstate Corridor Urban Renewal Area budget to support the development of a residential facility by LifeWorks Northwest.
And do you have some comments about this,
yeah.
Commissioner? Go ahead, please.
Real quick.
And then we'll call up the team.
Mayor has asked me to tee this one up. Thank you, Mayor. Next up is an item allocating $3.1 million to a LifeWorks Northwest development that will bring a beautiful new building housing a residential treatment facility and 16 units of transitional housing to Inner Northeast Portland. LifeWorks was awarded funding in the 2011 NOFA, which was a Notice of Funding Availability, which is the competitive process the city uses to award its federal funds and its urban renewal funds. This development is a partnership between LifeWorks and Project Network and is actually part of a larger undertaking that also includes Home Forward. Home Forward component will include 32 new affordable apartments on the site. We have three guests, special guests today who will tell us more about this development. Betty Krejci, Development Director at LifeWorks. Sherry Lynn Blanton, Program Director for Project Network. And Zabi Lopez, a Project Network program participant. Ladies, welcome all.
Thank you.
So we actually asked that this item get linked with a Home for Everyone presentation because it exemplifies the kind of thing that we've been doing with our partners already to try to end people's homelessness and provide self-sufficiency and growth and prosperity for folks in our community. So this particular project brings together the City of Portland, Home Forward, and Multnomah County with one of our really tremendous community partners, LifeWorks Northwest. So the City of Portland does what we do best, which is to provide funding and expertise in the development of affordable housing and community facilities. Multnomah County helps facilitate, among other things, alcohol and drug treatment to people in need in our community. And Home Forward has expertise in development and owning, operating, and managing housing, as well as providing their own resource in their ability to bond and bring rent subsidy. So I will let these experts tell you more about how wonderful this project is, but really wanted to emphasize that this is, in many ways, the embodiment of the plan that you just adopted by bringing our jurisdictions together to share our expertise to create a great project, to provide services to a population, primarily pregnant and parenting women, serving largely an African American community that has been a successful program for years and years in our community, and leveraging public resources with private resources. So our $3.1 million will leverage New Market Tax Credits as well as low-income housing tax credits and other affordable housing resources to make this happen. So great example and some really smart and dedicated partners. So happy to welcome Betty Krejci.
Thank you, Mayor Hales. Thank you. And thank you, commissioners, for allowing us to be here today. I'm here speaking on behalf of Mary Monnett, our president and CEO. She's unable to attend because she's traveling out of state, but sends her regrets. We thank you so much for this time. We're excited to have the opportunity to brief you on this exciting project. And we're grateful for your longstanding support and interest. I'm going to provide for you a brief overview of the project, and then I'll turn it over to Ms. Sherilyn and Zabi, who they can talk about the program itself. Project Network, as was stated, is a residential treatment center serving predominantly African-American women and their children in Northeast Portland. The program began in the late 1980s and was sponsored by Legacy Health in response to the drug-affected baby crisis we were seeing across the community. Fortunately, over the next several years, the community crisis subsided with effective treatment and support. But the need for drug and alcohol treatment has not. Statistics show that for every dollar invested in treatment, you can save $4 to $7 in reduced criminal justice costs. And for every $100,000 invested in treatment, you can save up to $487,000 in long-term health care costs. In 2004, Legacy determined Project Network would be better served as a community-based program. They turned to the African American Health Coalition, who asked LifeWorks Northwest to take on the services contract while they assumed ownership of the building. LifeWorks Northwest, in turn, entered into a long-term lease agreement and the intent of considering our options in the future. Our lease expires next year. The current facility is a 1920s studio apartment building on the corner of Mississippi and Russell in Northeast Portland, where many of these women have grown up and lived, an area that remains the cultural hub of the African-American community, even though many have been displaced. Although the facility is safe and adequate, it cannot meet our needs for the long-term future. There is limited space for children and no housing available once women graduate from their six-month treatment stay. Too often, women spend 6 months building a solid base of recovery, but then have no place to go following treatment. Many are forced to return to previous living situations with a user, or worse yet, a domestic violence situation. This is unacceptable. Thus, we began to dream of a new purpose-built facility that would better address the needs of our families, allowing us to serve more with better outcomes and provide a solution to the lack of affordable drug and alcohol-free housing. We turned to Gerty Needlin, and that dream, launched over 6 years ago, is why we are here today in front of you. Sticking to our core competency of treatment programs, we looked for a housing partner to own and operate the housing component, hence our collaboration with Home Forward. We received a Development Opportunity Services grant from the Portland Development Commission and evaluated our options. It was clear we needed to build. With our success last year with the City of Portland Bureau of Housing funding cycle, we were well positioned for the state funding cycle. And once state funding was achieved, we were off and running toward raising our $18 million on this project. LifeWorks Northwest committed to raising $3 million toward our portion of the new facility over the next 3 years. With the full support of our board and the help of our co-campaign chairs, Ed Washington, Bordy Meredith, and Linda Andrews, I am happy to say that we have already secured more than $1.6 million toward our $3 million goal. That represents 54% of the funding we need. With a generous program return on investment loan from Meyer Memorial Trust for $1.5 million, we are scheduled to close in early May and will break ground shortly thereafter. The new facility will be located on the corners of Beach and Mallory, one block north of Fremont and one block west of Martin Luther King, and as stated earlier, will contain 36 treatment beds and 32 two- and three-bedroom apartments at a very affordable permanent drug and alcohol-free housing. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Sherilyn Blanton, who is our program director, who will introduce our client.
Hello, my name is Sherilyn Blanton, and I would like to say thanks to all of you for having us here to speak to you today. it's true. I've been at Project Network for over 16 years. And one of the things that I've seen throughout the years is a housing barrier for our women. Our women come into treatment, some with their children, some without their children. And when they're done, they need some place to go, some place that's safe, some place that's affordable. And when I heard about the collaboration with Home Forward and LifeWorks Northwest, it was a phenomenal idea to me because of the years of seeing women who have not had places to go after they've completed treatment. I've brought to you one of the residents at our program, and she will speak to her experience about Project Network.
Hi, my name is Zabiela Lopez, and I am a resident currently at Project Network. I have 6 children, and I had a very serious prescription narcotic problem. So I worked and worked to get into a inpatient rehab. Project Network is culturally specific somewhat to tend to the needs that I needed as a woman, and not only a woman, but I have a daughter that's disabled also. A lot of the problems that I see as a resident of Project Network is mostly housing. We tend to work so hard on becoming active members of society, and I have to apologize, I didn't prepare anything because I've never done anything like this, but this shows you exactly where you can come from and actually sit at a table and speak to all of you. So I think it's very important to state how many girls are backing each other in the building in recovery, and how adamant women like Ms. Sherry Lynn and the women that work there are about making us productive members of society and responsible people for our children and for our families. I just found out that I'm getting my children back. And so a lot of the things that people see as normalcy, we didn't have as addicts. So Project Network brings in criminality. They bring in a lot of things that lead to your addiction and lead to relapses in addiction. And I think that it's very important to state that the women that are there now are very, very adamant about being sober. And that's having a refrigerator full of food, having a car, having the things that people don't notice day to day, we are very blessed with at Project Network. And like they said, there is a very big housing problem. There's women that are tending to stay longer than their stay needs to be due to housing problems. The fact that there's no area for disabled children is causing me to have a problem with my placement of children. So there's a lot of things that are important that are being neglected in this building. The Home Forward thing is amazing, and I do commend you for choosing to say aye on that. That's something very serious to the people that live there. Most of us have never had a home, and if they do leave treatment or if they do go back to where they were, they're going to be back to treatment. So this is a very large problem for the people that I've seen go through the program. I have friends there. I have children that I've become very accustomed to. I call them my nieces and nephews. We become a family, and you really don't realize how much people don't have family in addiction. You lose everything. You lose everybody. You lose your house. You lose the trust of the public. And that's the thing that I think that Project Network rebuilds. We rebuild a sisterhood. We rebuild the lean on me. You know, that's really important to the 34 females that are attending now. I am a big sister to a woman that just came in, and she has 7 days clean. And the beginning of your sobriety is very shaded. You don't understand where you're going with your time or how you're going to recover, basically. And when you have someone standing next to you that's either been through worse, better, or right in the middle, and you hear something that's worth hearing, like the NA program, things like that, when you have an addict next to you and you know somebody has been there too, domestic violence, having your children taken away, all those things are very, very important in recovery. The first 30 days is the hardest work you'll ever do in your life. Every emotion will come out in the first 30 days. And I think Project Network has absolutely 100% saved my family, my life. I'm married. I've been married for 10 years, and I've been addiction most of our marriage. We have couples counseling, which is not only for couples, but it's for relationship building. So you can learn how to build your relationship with your mother, your father, your best friends, your children even, and how to fight fair, how to do things the way that normal is seen as. And a lot of the women don't realize that they were in domestic violence with a man shouting at them. A lot of women don't realize that they had become criminals to maintain something that was so far gone in addiction, stealing cars, you know. And Project Network has brought every single thing that I can literally think of in addiction to the table. They have literally saved me. Getting in there was a miracle for me, and getting my children back is a miracle for me. So I do find it very important that they do find a housing medium, I guess you could call it, to really help the women stabilize. It's not even a take care of them kind of thing. It's that all these women are very driven about their sobriety, and all of them are very hardworking. Every day we attend classes, Monday through Friday, even with this lovely lady here, we take classes. And all the women that work there work very hard, very, very hard at teaching us ways to become active members of society. And I think that's very that's mostly in part to that a lot of them are in recovery also. And seeing people that have been at the bottom and possibly even been residents of Project Network working towards the same goals with you is amazing. I think it's a very good place.
I'm going to stop you there.
Okay.
Because I have this terrible feeling we're going to lose a quorum. Okay. And I want to make sure we vote on this.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you for your eloquent testimony.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us. And, Paula, do we have anyone signed up?
I didn't have a separate sign-up sheet for this one, so if anybody wants to testify on this.
Congratulations on getting your children
Thank
back.
You very much. I appreciate
you being here. It's great. Well, thanks, panel. And then, do we have anyone else signed up? I didn't hear.
I have a separate sign-up sheet for this one.
You did not?
I did not.
Okay. All right, is there anyone that would like to testify? If not, then we will take action on the ordinance.
Bish.
Another example of a great partnership. Project Network, LifeWorks Northwest, the Housing Bureau, and Home Forward. Thank you for joining us and telling us your inspiring story.
No problem.
And for reminding us why we invest these precious dollars into building stronger families.
Mm-hmm.
And we wish you the best of luck
going forward.
I want to also just note, Mayor, that we have a competitive funding process. And as compelling as this was not funded until the third try. And it took three tries to get it right and to have the strong foundation necessary to get the public funding and to give everyone confidence that this would be a success. And I think that is a further vindication of the NOFA process we have, where if you fall short the first time, you're allowed to go back to the Housing Bureau and think through how to strengthen the proposal. And this proposal on its third time was just unbeatable. So thank you for all your good work, and thank you for leveraging so many private dollars to make this happen as well. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, this is a great project, and LifeWorks is an excellent organization, well-run and well-managed and really spot on what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Ms. Lopez, for your very eloquent testimony for not having done something like this before. You did an excellent job.
So.
I think you underscore the importance of Project Network
and
the need to have support for women in recovery and women with children, too.
Yes.
Sometimes we don't think a lot about how children are impacted by the travails of their mother or their father. And this is really a very comprehensive approach that's designed to provide that bedrock of support for women and children to be successful in life. And it's tough. You know, I can't say I empathize or have been there, but I can certainly appreciate the difficulties and challenges of recovery. So
thank
you all for doing this. This is really a proud moment here. Aye.
Fritz?
I had the privilege of visiting your current facility several years ago when this was just a dream and not at all sure how we were going to get there, so it's particularly satisfying to be on the council as we approve this loan and to take care of some of our most vulnerable people, women, culturally specific care, people with disabilities, and ongoing the continuum from treatment to housing to then independent living. So I'm very proud to be able to support this. Aye.
Hales.
Great project, great partnership. Thank you very much for being here. Look forward to seeing it coming up out of the ground and taking care of a lot of people. Thank you. Aye.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to the regular agenda. We got to do consent. Right, thank you, because we now have a quorum. We have a consent calendar, and we have one item that has been pulled off of consent. I believe it's 309. Any others? And then let's take a vote on the remainder of the consent calendar.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. I'm going to save that pulled item until a little later so we can get to some other things and keep people here in the room to do them.
Emergency, though, so.
Yeah. Let's take item 320, and then we'll probably jump ahead after that.
Adopt the update to the basic emergency operations plan.
Carmen here. There she is. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners, Carmen Merlo, Portland Bureau of Emergency Management. I'm actually going to talk about the two ordinances in front of you today. The first is the update to the Basic Emergency Operations Plan. This outlines generally the roles and responsibilities of each city bureau during any emergency event. The updates here were mostly administrative in nature. The real significant change was done to the Alert and Warning Annex, and that was to take into account some new technology that we have currently. We are the only jurisdiction in the state of Oregon to have this technology. It's called Wireless Emergency Alerts. You may have seen this as a text on your mobile device. It not only pings your device through vibration and a sound, but you can't use your cell phone until you acknowledge receipt of this text. You may have seen an Amber Alert recently or a Blizzard Alert we had back in December. We now have this technology, and so the Alert and Warning Annex was updated to take this into account. So I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Great. Any questions for Carmen? Anyone else to testify on this resolution?
No one signed up.
Okay. Thank you very much. Roll call.
Fish?
Carmen, I sleep better at night knowing that you're in charge.
Thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate that very much.
Thank you for your good work. Aye.
Saltzman?
Yeah, good work. I mean, we tend to underappreciate the important work that you do here, so, and we probably don't give you enough time to go over everything, but we do appreciate the keeping the eye on the need for capable responses in emergencies. So thank you,
Commissioner. Fritz.
Thank you for your work. Aye. Thank you.
Hales.
Carmen and her team are the living personification of the Boy Scout motto, be prepared. Thank you. Aye. Okay, we're going to take a couple items out of order since we're doing quorum maintenance here.
Vote on the next one.
Oh, yes, 321. Let's vote on 321 since they go together.
321, adopt the update to the Alert and Warning Annex to the Basic Emergency Operations Plan.
Roll call on the resolution.
Did you want to ask for testimony?
I don't think there was any, right? You had no one signed up.
I doubt it.
Okay, so anyone else want to testify? Let's vote.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, let's take items 327 and 328 together, and then we'll turn to the rest of the regular agenda after that.
327, amend contract administered by the Bureau of Human Resources, Benefits and Wellness Office, and Benefit Help Solutions for Health Reimbursement Account Administration, effective May 1, 2013 through June 30, 2014, for implementation of a voluntary retirement incentive program, and 328, authorize general unpaid leave of absence agreement and release with city employee.
Good morning, Ms. Kenwit.
All right, morning, Mayor, Commissioners, Anna Kenwit, Director of Bureau of Human Resources. But first ordinance is probably the longest title of any we'd submitted. But basically what this is it's a voluntary retirement incentive program that we have developed given the city's current economic condition. And the ordinance is one that would encourage voluntary separations and hopefully then would save involuntary separations via layoffs or other programmatic cuts, given the city's current economic situation. There are two parts to the ordinance. One is to establish the incentive program, which I will cover. The second is amending our contract with Benefit Help Solutions. That's the entity that currently manages our FSA accounts in order to establish the health reimbursement accounts, which are key to this retirement incentive. And Kathy Bless, the benefits and wellness manager, is going to cover that part. In developing this program, we looked at some others, most notably King County, the Portland Development Commission, as well as a plan that Multnomah County had had at one point in place. The basic incentive is that for each eligible employee who's actually approved for participation, there's no right to participate or guarantee. They will receive a $20,000 payment from their bureaus into a health reimbursement account. The $20,000 figure was chosen. That's currently what it would cost for full family coverage for a year. And so that's how we landed on that number. Also in looking at our retirement survey that we sent out most recently to employees, 53% of those responded did state that one of the reasons that they were postponing retirement was an inability to pay for medical expenses before Medicare. So putting this money into a health reimbursement account allows employees who are eligible to decide what qualified medical expenses they want that money to go into. It could be premiums. It could be something else. Bridging the gap for a year when healthcare reform and the healthcare exchanges go into place. There is one amendment that I'm going to discuss. Second Amendment, Commissioner Fish will present, and one is that to amend the agreement to include both PERS retirement eligible employees as well as FPDNR retirement eligible employees. Basically, as I said, this program is a management tool. It's voluntary. Participation must result in savings, and bureaus will need to determine the number of employees that they can offer this incentive to. To be eligible, you have to be a regular, aka permanent employee with the City of Portland with 5 years of service. You have to actually be eligible to retire under the PERS system or our FPDNR system. The employee has to submit their intent to retire between April 10th and May 10th and separate by June 30th. We do have one exception that the separation would still have to occur June 30th. At Bureau discretion could allow an employee to work as a returning retiree for an additional month until July 1. That's partly an acknowledgement of the fact that it can take up to 90 days for PERS to actually start paying the retirement checks to employees. The Bureau contribution for each eligible employee who's approved participation will be made basically on their last day of employment with the city. The adoption of the ordinance would also authorize me to enter into negotiations with our unions so that this program can be made available to represented employees, because without that agreement, of course, we can only make it available to non-represented employees. There is, in consideration of the employee receiving the $20,000 contribution to the health reimbursement account, the employee also agrees that they will not seek reemployment with the city in any status for 2 years. And there's an additional amendment that I will ask Commissioner Fish to present on that point.
Thank you. And Mayor and colleagues, on Exhibit A, I am going to move an additional amendment under eligibility to make clear that the two-year bar that applies to reemployment covers employees, contractors, or subcontractors. In other words, to make it clear that you don't come back in any capacity, number one, which is intended to discourage the so-called revolving door practice and create opportunities for other city employees. And second, we've proposed a language which would allow the city council, to waive the bar on reemployment by ordinance if the council determines it's the best interest in the city. I want to be very clear that my intent in having that council override is that the council would override the bar only because of an unforeseen and compelling business need and not simply for the sake of convenience. And one example that we thought of is if, for example, there was an earthquake or some other emergency and a senior manager was incapacitated or unable to serve, the city might want to bring someone back who had retired under this program, but it would be in those limited circumstances and not simply for the convenience.
Good, understood. So would you like to move the amendments as shown as Exhibit A? I believe those encompass everything that we're doing in terms of amendments. Is
yes.
That right?
And our amendments have been cleared with council and with HR.
Yes.
Second.
Commissioner Fish moves and Fritz seconds, and they're on the table. Kathy, okay. Would you like to add anything to this?
The contract includes an amendment that changes our agreement with our current third-party administrator that processes all the payments for our flexible spending account, the medical expense reimbursement account, and the dependent care account. So in order to offer the program to employees, we needed to be able to have a third-party administrator that would process the eligible qualifying medical expense claims that participants would submit. And this ordinance and the contract amendment does that. It allows for enough within the agreement to cover all of the employee elections and contributions as well as what bureaus would contribute to an HRA. The administrative expenses is very small. It's $5 per participant per month.
I have a question on that. Yes. Is the $3.8 million that's referenced in the agreement, that's old language?
That part of it's old language. Part of it covers the FSA employee elections for a five-year period of time, plus the $3.8 million covers roughly what would be a huge amount of participation in this program, being 150 participants. But SAP isn't going to process money or administrative fees unless we show all of the dollars running through the contract, whether they're city money or employee dollars.
Thank you. Are we increasing the not-to-exceed amount in the contract?
Yes.
From what to what?
It is from, I think it was 18.
Sorry.
I don't have the original number. 21,250,000 for the new extended five-year period of time. Well, it's not an extended. The contract runs through 2014. So this additional $3.8 million would be encompassed in the 21 overall dollar amount. I'm not answering your question very well.
Well, I think it would. I'm assuming that you and the city attorney have done this correctly. It would be helpful after the hearing if you could give me a strike through underlined version of the contract so I could see what the changes are. How is the money? The additional money is coming from existing bureau budgets.
The program is set up to deposit those $20,000 per retiree participant, and the Bureau has to show an offsetting savings in order to do that.
And the not-to-exceed contract amount reflects the estimate
yes.
for that?
Yes.
So if you could, after, get me that underlined strikeout, that would be helpful. But thank you very much for doing the program.
And as Kathy mentioned, that the estimate of 150 participants I think is very high, but we did want to be on the safe side in terms of the contract amendment. You know, two final points. One is that for this incentive program also to work for the bureaus, I would ask, well, the mayor right now is commissioner in charge of all of the bureaus, that the vacancy savings exception be waived for these particular positions, because if those savings can't be used, obviously it's going to be difficult for bureaus to achieve the savings necessary to effectuate the program. Then last, simply the next steps, if it's authorized today, a communication will go out today. It will go out to all employees, because obviously we don't know who's eligible to retire and who isn't, with information about the program and what they need to do to submit an application for participation.
Thank
so
you.
So your estimate, 150 employees, and it's that's an estimate of non-represented?
That would be total employees. And again, I given what we've seen in other programs, the participation rate, I think that's very high. But and
so do we have any indication whether our unions will be on board with this or not?
Yes. I've had conversations with COPIA, PPA, PFFA. They've all indicated some interest. So I think so.
And this is separate from sort of our collective bargaining.
Yes, it is separate.
Yeah, it's
okay. Sorry for interrupting. It is completely separate, Commissioner, and the program really is only in effect through June 30th. So it's not a program that we're proposing to continue. Obviously, if it is something that has benefit, we can bring it back to council.
Okay. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Any further questions for staff? Thanks very much. Anyone signed up to testify on these items?
No one signed up for either.
Then let's take a roll call on 327 as amended.
Mayor, right? You first need to take a vote on the amendment.
I have to adopt the amendments. Sorry. They've been moved and seconded. Roll call to adopt the amendments.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, now on the resolution, I'm sorry, on the ordinance as amended.
Fish?
I want to thank Hannah Kuhn in my office for working on our amendment. And I want to compliment our team at HR. We have a big budget hole. This is a creative idea for how that may help us close our budget. And it also addresses another concern that we have, which is a lot of the folks that are in the pipeline and our most junior employees are people that we have spent a fair amount of time recruiting because they bring diversity to our ranks. And as we got during our hearings, we got some sobering statistics on the profile of some of the people that would be subject to layoff under one or more scenarios. And a voluntary retirement program like this has the also added a benefit of protecting some of those positions and allowing us to meet larger citywide equity goals. So thank you for your good work on this. I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales.
We're coming in for a hard landing on a budget, and everything we can do to make it a little softer will matter, whether it's saving money by not spending funds that are authorized now for this or that project that can be delayed, whether it's holding vacancies vacant, avoiding overtime. There's things that all of us as city employees can do to soften this blow. This particular one will allow some of our employees who are pondering that question about retirement to go ahead and do so. Clearing the way for us to keep somebody who's earlier in their career working for the city. So thank you for good work in putting this together. Vote aye.
Thank you.
And on 328, please.
Fish?
Oh, are we not? 328 is?
That's the leave of absence. That's also an emergency.
Yeah, that's my second.
I wonder, was there going to be any discussion on that? Or if not, we'll just take the vote.
I'm certainly happy to take the vote.
I confused it with the one that was pulled off consent.
We're ready to vote.
Yeah, she read it.
I just have a question.
Sure.
On the lines of innocent until proven guilty, why are we not having the employee continue to work?
There was an issue in terms of the accommodation that would have to be made according to the court order that would have been difficult for the Bureau to accomplish. So that was why we negotiated the unpaid leave of absence.
And this is acceptable to Mr. Kahn?
Yes. He the exhibit, the agreement, if you authorize the ordinance, would be authorizing me and then Dean Marriott to enter into the agreement, but he has already signed it, as has his union.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone signed up to testify on this item?
No one signed up.
Okay, roll call, please.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye.
Thank you.
All right, let's return to the regular agenda.
Mayor, do you think we could do the emergencies?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I was going to see there's one more emergency item, isn't there?
309 that's called.
325, let's...
And there's also a second reading on 329.
Yes, there sure is. Okay, you're going to be here that long?
I'll be probably 15 minutes.
Okay, if you got a few more minutes,
we have somebody here to testify on 309 and
okay.
Small staff.
Well, let's take up 325 and see if there's anyone here to testify on that.
325, authorize a contract with the lowest responsible bidder for the Northeast, Southeast, 50s, Bikeway, Northeast Thompson to Southeast Woodstock.
Anyone signed up to testify on this?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Anyone like to speak on this item? This is a long-awaited project. I think we might be ready to vote. Roll call, please.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, and then 309, right? You want to check that up? There's no other, no, oh, sorry, you're saying second reading on 329, please. Second reading, 329.
Approve the designation of three trees as City of Portland Heritage Trees.
Second reading, roll call.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, let's return to 309.
Authorize the director of the Bureau of Environmental Services to enter into an administrative settlement agreement and order on consent with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for supplemental RIFS work at River Mile 11E in the Portland Harbor Superfund site and a confidential common interest and joint defense agreement up to $400,000.
Thank you, Mayor Hales. This does represent a significant step forward in our work on the Superfund. I have a minor amendment, which I'm passing out, which has been reviewed by the mayor, regarding the title and the now, therefore, directs in number 2B to authorize the mayor and the director of the Bureau of Environmental Services to enter into the agreement, both in the title and in the 2B. So I move that the mayor be added as a signatory.
Okay. Second to that. And do we have anyone? We didn't have anyone signed up to testify on this, or do we? Yes, we do.
Someone did want to testify.
I have someone here to testify on the side. Good morning.
Mayor Hales, members of the City Council. I'm Rick Applegate. For over a decade, I was privileged to serve as your Portland Harbor Superfund Administrator. And I know you have serious business today and quorum problems, so I'll be very brief. And if I'm not, I'll be trying to get some help with a parking ticket, I'm sure. During the course of our work on Superfund, we determined that River Mile 11 had the most serious PCB contaminant levels in the entire Portland Harbor. That's that piece of land that's just upstream from the Fremont Bridge and across the river. And as once we learned about that, we didn't just sit idly by. We went into the river and with PGE, Pacific Corp, Zidel, DEQ, we actually conducted the first comprehensive environmental assessment in the downtown reach. And we initiated with DEQ a very serious investigative effort at some risk in the River Mile 11 area with sediment and sediment traps. It was the persistence of EPA with strong support of the city that enabled us to make a determination that River Mile 11 was so highly contaminated. And if we had missed that opportunity, it was controversial at the time. If we had missed that opportunity, we well could have had a very serious obstruction in the Superfund process. And as you know, it doesn't take much in Superfund to get things further delayed and off track, as we've experienced over the last decade. So this is a very good day, and thanks are due to all those parties who at some risk have agreed without having to admit or resolve their liabilities, as is the case for the city, are stepping forward to undertake this important work. Commissioner Saltzman, Commissioner Fritz have done a lot of work on this in the past. And Mayor Hales, you made this an issue during your campaign, I know. And congratulations on getting it moving as a priority so early in your term. The last thing I would say is, not surprisingly, those of you who know me know I wish this all could have happened nearly 2 years ago and that we would be on the verge of the cleanup now, because it's such an important area, but better late than never. What I would urge is that beyond this work, that the city do all it can to expedite the day when the actual cleanup will be underway. There's no need to wait for the federal record of decision and then risk going into a fairly conventional multi-year remedial design that would only put this off further. The fact of the matter is, it's critical to get to the cleanup, because these PCBs at very high levels are not just in the mud. They are, we detected them in the water column, and they are in fish tissue at very high levels during times of the year. They're even mobile at the upper end of the Superfund site. And that's why this area is on virtually everyone's list as one of the very first cleanups that should be undertaken in the river system. So thank you for making sure this essential and very important step is going to be taken. I think it is a significant step, and my best to you as we move forward on this cleanup. But we all hope that eventually this river can be restored to the point where those who swim and those who fish and those who come to rely on this river for food and for basic nutrition can enjoy the bounty of these marvelous waters as we all try to coexist with the very important economic activities that are taking place here. So thank you very much. This is a good day.
Thanks, Rick. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your work, Rick. And if you could please email me your comments, you said it much more eloquently than I.
Be happy to do that. Thank you. Have a good morning.
Yeah, I'd like to see those as well. Thanks, Rick.
Councilor, I'm so excited to be here and hear about this. I just wanted to bring up something that really bothers
me. Put your name in
Marrying here. Regarding pollution in the neurotoxicity of the fish, in California, my home state, there are warnings.